Good morning. You've tuned in to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local, brought to you via BFF.fm. Just this week, Congress avoided a government shutdown by making a down-to-the-wire decision to pass an interim budget. It keeps the government running until December 11th of this year, and the threat of a government shutdown had the nation abuzz. But it also could have had what might be little-known consequences right here in our backyard. Head Start, a program that helps prepare young, low-income children for school, relies on the federal government to run. Mission Neighborhood Centers, a local nonprofit, operates several Head Start programs in San Francisco. Stay with us for our first half to hear from Mission Neighborhood Center's Executive Director, Sam Ruiz, talk about how the federal shutdown might affect your neighbors. After that, we'll be skipping a few generations and talking about how some Mission street musicians earn their keep. Mission local contributor Noah Arroyo has been interviewing and shadowing musicians who play anywhere people will listen, and he's been getting to know them on a very personal level. All of that coming up. If you'd like to chime in, you can tweet at us. We are at MLNow. I'm Laura Wenis, and I'm here now with Joe Ravano-Barros, another Mission local staffer. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
And with Sam Ruiz, Executive Director of Mission Neighborhood Centers. Sam, thank you so much for joining us, especially on such short notice.
Good morning, and thank you for the invitation. It's much appreciated.
So, I hear Head Start is turning 50. Tell us about the program and what exactly it does, and how does it depend on the federal government to run?
So, Head Start program, by large, is a part day, part year preschool readiness program throughout the nation. It is also the federal program that has been funded through grants, of course, from the federal government, longer than any other program. It basically began back in the 60s as a war on poverty project of the federal government. And Mission Neighborhood Centers operates a program with that serves 442 children.
Wow.
Infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. And the goal, again, is to prepare our children to enter public school system and succeed throughout their 12 years, as well as abiding by what public and private reports indicate, all studies and research indicate, that a child who is prepared to enter kindergarten has a greater likelihood of graduating from high school, entering university, and graduating from college. And so our goal is to impact basically the achievement gap that we experience, not just in San Francisco, but throughout California and our nation, unfortunately.
So tell me what this has to do with the federal government.
Well, the federal government, of course, funds the Head Start program and early Head Start programs. San Francisco has three grantees. We are one of three grantees.
Okay.
Originally, the Head Start program that we submitted a bid for to become a grantee was operated by San Francisco State University. So they had a contract with the federal government to provide Head Start and early Head Start services in San Francisco. They, in turn, contracted with Mission Neighborhood Centers to provide what's called delegate agency Head Start and early Head Start services.
And what is that?
Well, early Head Start provides services to infants, 0 to 1.5, as well as toddlers, 1.5 to 3. And then Head Start provides services to children ages 3 to 5.
Okay. So this government shutdown thing has happened before, and we know that it affects families around the country. And it sounds like you were not affected by the 2013 government shutdown, but you could have been. Tell us what happened.
Well, at that point, our organization, fortunately, had a surplus. Not necessarily a surplus, I shouldn't call it that. We basically were underspending. And so that underspending allowed us to survive the days that Head Start programs were closed because of the budget situation that we faced in this country. This year, we were spared, because our grant comes from a different, has a different cycle. And so if Congress and the president hadn't approved a continuing resolution, basically we would have been saved. So yeah, fortunately, we're very, very lucky that in fact we continue to have our 11 sites open for services for all our 442 children. Excuse me.
So does this create a situation where you sort of have to prepare yourself and keep a surplus or underspend because you know that things like this could happen and the funding could essentially disappear?
Well, I wish I could say that yes, that that's the answer, but the reality is that the underspending that took place were because we had just recently been granted the title of Head Start grantee. And so because we were a new organization, we hadn't spent as much as we had projected during the startup period.
Okay. So, I mean, let's talk hypothetical here. I mean, what would happen if your funding did disappear and you didn't have that the safety blanket of savings or the different funding cycle?
Without any question, if that were the crisis, then we would have to shut down our program. So that means that all 442 children could not have access to the Head Start program. And let's remember also, Head Start is a comprehensive a preschool program. So it also provides services to the child's parents. If a close down or a shutdown were to occur, both the child and the parent is affected by that shutdown.
And how? I mean, what happens?
Well, most likely, parents are utilizing the Head Start program for two reasons. Number one, because they want their child to receive a quality preschool program service. And number two, because they are either working part-time or are working full-time, but they're working poor individuals or families. And so they place reliance on Head Start to be able to go out and earn a living. The shutdown, again, prevents a child from receiving quality preschool services and the parent from earning a wage.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we were talking about how this helps close the achievement gap and how this prepares kids for school and eventually college. I mean, these are very young children. How can it have an impact for them to be... How can it have an impact on their college life to be educated, you know, at such an early age or included in these programs at such an early age?
Well, clearly, any type of disruption in a child's life is not a benefit to anyone, particularly the child itself or her or himself. And so we make every effort intentionally and strategic to avoid any type of disruption. But you are absolutely correct. If we were to shut down, it does mean that this disruption will impact the child and will impact the parents also.
In long term?
Yes.
Okay.
So are you worried about how things are going to turn out in December? Or you're safe because you have some savings and your grant cycle is not affected this time?
You know, we don't have any type of savings that I can claim at this point. And it may be that we won't have any savings by December either. I think the effort, the focus, the intentional direction that we're taking is one of coalescing with other Head Start groups and associations, both in California as well as the National Head Start Association, to engage in advocacy efforts that will hopefully prevent, you know, any type of disruption of service taking place because of the December 11 deadline, the looming deadline. And I say looming just in case Congress decides to postpone any action on the approval of the budget.
So what does that advocacy look like?
The advocacy definitely looks very promising. There is no question in our mind that the vast majority of Head Start programs throughout the nation want to accomplish the same goal, and that is to continue to provide services without any type of disruption.
But does this look, are you pressuring government officials, congressmen? What does that lobbying look like?
No, I think the approach generally is to identify the benefits that Head Start programs extend to our families and to our children. And so there is a concerted effort in having our parents communicate with their elected officials, mm-hmm. Their federal elected officials, whether it's a senator or a representative. But, you know, their voices need to be heard, and we are making sure that their voices will be heard because they are basically the most important individual that any elected official can hear from. Mm-hmm. Those of us that are employed by Head Start program, obviously, you know, we're not necessarily seen in a good light because our livelihoods basically depend on those dollars. You know, it's basically our salaries, right?
And so people assume ulterior motive?
Well, of course, they always will. I mean, that's perfectly fine. It does give us an opportunity to advocate on behalf of our parents, but nevertheless, I think the best approach that we can take is to have the parent, him or herself, voice her own concern and preoccupation versus having a messenger.
Mm-hmm. And do you also focus on, you know, getting public awareness? Because when people think of a shutdown, you know, they often think of national parks or monuments closing, but they don't think of these social services a lot of the time.
They don't. And that is the unfortunate situation that does require that we be much more aggressive in our advocacy efforts, because Head Start is the last thing on people's mind.
Right.
It's usually what they use every day that's a concern. But in our case, what we do is we combine our Head Start dollars or funds with California Department of Education child care funding. And as I mentioned earlier, Head Start is a part day, part year program. What most of our parents need is full day care. And so by combining the federal and state dollar, we're able to provide full day services, full year, to parents who are working poor parents. And so we start our program at 8 in the morning and adjourn at 5:30, giving working people, poor working people, an opportunity to earn a living.
And this is staffed for the entire day, right?
It is staffed for the entire
day. So I imagine that's where most of the funds are going, because you have to pay people to be there.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. Great analysis.
Thank you.
Yes.
People are encouraged to reach out to their federal representatives. Can they do this bilingually?
Oh, it's even better when they do it bilingually or monolingually in a different language other than English.
Because I imagine our representatives don't speak Spanish.
It basically identifies the true fabric of our community,
mm-hmm.
right? Asian American, Latin American, you name it. You know, any one individual immigrating from another country, speaking a different language, it's important that our elected officials hear what they have to say, although it may not be in English. But again, it identifies who the true recipient of Head Start services, right? Who that person is.
Great. We're running out of time for this segment here. Any last thoughts you want to share about Head Start before we adjourn?
It's a great program in San Francisco. It definitely is a great program throughout the nation, and it addresses the economic needs of our families as well as the early childhood development needs of all our children.
Fantastic. Sam Ruiz, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for the invitation. We'll be right back.
we are back. Thank you for your patience with that short intermission. Joining us now is Noah Arroyo, who has reported both long-form and breaking news pieces for Mission Local and the San Francisco Public Press, among others, I imagine. Most recently, he's been working on a series of features about local street musicians, getting close to them and their lives as he does so. Noah, welcome.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. So, Noah, introduce us to some of the characters who have been the stars of your stories.
We're pretty early on in the series, first off. I've only really dived into three different pieces, so three different subjects. I want this to go much farther, if possible. I mean, it just depends on how many of these pieces you guys want to buy from me. I
really want them all the time.
I would love to profile every single musician that frequents the Mission District. Ideally, we'll see what happens. But so far, let's see. The first piece was a gentleman by the name of Gary McElroy. He plays harmonica about 3 to 4 days a week over at the 24th Street BART station. Mm-hmm. He jams for a few hours and drives back in his big old blue truck to his home over in Daly City. And he's got a long and storied life. Ups and downs, strikes and gutters, hit the drugs for a little while, got back into music, big in the blues, quite a character, larger than life. So there's him. Then most recently we published, I think it was last week, a piece on a guy. His name's Luis Aranda. He comes from Mexico. This guy's story is amazing. He immigrated here when he was 60. He told me he came here at the recommendation of his family members, who said, hey, you can get better medical coverage here, or medical care, than you can back in Mexico City. So he's 66 now. He's been here for that long and just been making a living in the Mission District. So, you know, 6-7 days a week, he's beating the pavement, playing solo or with his troupe of guys. And this would be Norteño music, which is kind of like, if you don't have a trained ear, which I really didn't, it's kind of like mariachi music. But walking around, he's one of the guys who will walk in and out of some of the big time taquerias in the area and play a lot and walk around and see if he can get anybody to tip him. So that's how he makes his living. Lives over in Richmond, BART's in and out. Sometimes he says he doesn't make enough money to cover the BART ride back home, so he has to dip into whatever he brought with him that day. Sometimes he makes a lot of money, relatively speaking. He can send it home to his youngest son, who's 20 and attending university in Mexico City still for computer sciences. He's got 10 kids. He's got 7 siblings. They're, except for maybe 2, they're all back in Mexico. So he's here with his wife. And as he said it, life in the U.S. is bittersweet.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So this is not easy. I mean, this is a man who's also, you know, like regularly getting kicked out of restaurants for trying to play there and make a living, right?
It's true. Sometimes, yeah. And I went in and talked to some of these establishments and it's in the article. I'm not going to name names on the radio station, but yeah, if you want to look it up, there are some taquerias and restaurants in the Mission District that are not amenable to these live musicians who wander around, wandering in and out looking for tips. And the reasons I got was because I say, like, neighbors upstairs would complain about the noise, or because customers complained about the noise, or maybe what made a lot of sense to me was that, say, the people working in these taquerias could not communicate with customers effectively. Say if they were calling out orders and saying, come and get your burrito, and well, they couldn't hear it, so it stopped everything up. Mm-hmm. So it's not a hard and fast rule, but it's definitely true that it's one more obstacle that that these people have to face when they're trying to make an honest day's work.
Yeah, so what compels people to this way of life? I mean, this is not easy. It's probably not fun to be yelled at. Why do this?
You know, there are only a few themes that have been constant. And once again, I've really only talked at length to three people at this point. I want to get much more, but I don't have enough data points to really draw a direct line here.
I love it. We're talking about getting intimate with people and going to their homes, and you're like, I don't have enough data points.
Well, that's how I try to approach this. So I have a background in doing a lot of dense, sort of not very humanistic or personal policy work, in reporting, tearing apart pieces of legislation and talking to politicians and all that. And that's fine, important work, but it's not always fun. In fact, it's rarely fun, at least for me. So this has been a wonderful opportunity to do the opposite. And what I found is that rather than, you know, citing, being able to spot a trend that is consistent throughout all of these people, what I've found so far is that the Mission District is a character in their lives, as opposed to the other way around. So maybe I will run into at some point, you know, a musician who says, I'm only playing here because I got, this is my one skill other than the one that I was getting paid for, but that got, I got laid off from that job because they had to move out of the Mission District because their real estate prices jumped through the roof and they couldn't pay it anymore, and now I'm home. I mean, maybe that happens. Mm-hmm. But so far what I've been finding is that the Mission District is a character in their story, and how they interact with that is probably the thing that readers can relate to the most. In this case, Gary McElroy, the harp player, he loves the Mission District because people here are wonderful. They're nice. They're fun. They tip well.
Hear that, Mission?
Y'all are nice people. It's true. It's true. He said he makes better tips over at Fisherman's Wharf, but he has to fight for the sidewalk space. Whereas over here, he often gets to have conversations with people. So the buskers in general, what I've run into is that a lot of passersby will hand them business cards and say, hey, look, call me because I got this party coming up. I'd love for you to play there. And that's a major source of income for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also networking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Okay. So there are upsides. I don't have to feel like this is a tragic story all the way through. That's good. That's a relief. talk more about some of the personal victories that the people you've been following have experienced.
Oh, I think, Well, so I've talked to three at this point, like I say. So Gary is the harp player over on 24th Street. For him, playing in the Mission District is a victory. Mm-hmm. Like I said, he's got a bit of a rough past. And like, he used to have a wife and kids, and that all went out the window at some point. And for him, coming, you know, 3 to 4 days a week to the Mission District and playing and enjoying himself, because he really does. He jams. He has a lot of fun. That's the highlight of every day. And he says that he warms up to that every day. He writes songs for performance. Let's see, Luis Aranda. I'm going to guess it's the camaraderie. His is such an interesting story. So he says that he makes more money playing with a group than he does solo. Tips more reliably. In other words, that passersby are more likely to give him money if he's got a troop. So there are about somewhere around 10 guys who live nearby him over in Richmond, California. And when he's getting ready to start a quote unquote shift, he calls them up and says, look, who's available? I've got the instruments, come with me. And then they work for 6 or 7 hours. I imagine that with his family all back home in Mexico, that's probably the thing that he looks forward to the most. Because the guy's got diabetes. His legs are swollen. He's walking around the Mission District in pain for at least half his shift. He's got to work shorter and shorter shifts. So I think the people around him are probably what does it. That's actually how I met him. I was over in Pancho Villa's, and I saw this this cool old guy dressed to the nines with aviators on in the back, sitting next to all the other Pancho Villa employees who were on break at the moment. And so I don't speak a lick of Spanish. And just in case he didn't speak any English and I was right, I could use the staff members as translators. So
clever. Yeah, I was about to ask you about access. I mean, like, you don't even share a language with these people sometimes.
It's so true.
I think you went to his house, right?
I did.
I don't speak your language. I don't know you. Can I come over?
Yeah, basically. I mean, well, when you go up to a person and say, I want to write all about you, and I only want to write what you want to tell me, and we can talk about, you know, we can craft that narrative together. Mm-hmm. I think it opens people up. I know a guy who speaks very good Spanish and very good English. Mm-hmm. So he was my translator. But yeah, anyway, so I met Luis Aranda through his friends, essentially. So that's his high point. And the third one is forthcoming. This gal named Rhiannon. She's a sitar player. She plays over outdoors at 16th and Mission BART station. And for her, it's practicing the craft. She's very young, early 20s. She's early on in her career and getting to know the instrument. So just playing at all, I think, is what she loves. It's why she's in the area. She's in the area to study with a well-known other sitar player. Yeah.
Great. So let's delve into a little bit more of how, you know, like what the process is like for you following people and getting to know them really intimately. You know, I keep coming back to this. You went to somebody's home. You like,
it's true.
You, you spend quite a bit of time with these folks. What is that like? And well, I mean, what do you think it's like for them too?
I don't know what it's like for them. I've never had somebody do it to me. I've only been on one side of this. And I'm kind of desensitized to it at this point. I would, well, okay. So what happens for me is I try to get them comfortable and then I want to see where they take me. And I look for, I mean, as we do, I look for the conflict. I look for the controversy. What is this person's obstacle? And maybe it's something that I can tie to local politics. Y'all write about land use quite a bit. So maybe it's that. You're laughing. You should be writing about land use. I mean, that's the hot topic
like,
in the Mission District.
How can I connect musicians to land use?
Well, I mean, yeah, we all have to deal with the fact that the Mission District is different than how it used to be. And part of that is it's more expensive. Yeah. These people do too. I haven't met one person who lives in the Mission District, and every one of them I've asked and said, hey, look, could you afford to do it? No, well, of course I can't.
Yeah.
I commute in. I mean, this guy commutes in from Richmond. Another one commutes in from San Rafael, and another from Daly City. So I'd say that's probably the only trend I found so far. You get to know them as a human being, you know, so person to person. You see where they take you, and then you nudge a little bit when they mention something sort of offhand. Say like Luis, talking about the restaurants that wouldn't let him enter. Or Gary McElroy talking about his rough past. That's the good stuff. When they slow down, they trail off. Like, no, come back to me. Tell me about you. I suspect it's a painful process for them, especially when they're talking about stuff that's hard to talk about. But it's probably also a bit cathartic for them, so I sleep easy knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to make it as painless as possible. I'm not trying to nail anybody, and I think they get that a few minutes into the conversation. They're usually very gracious. And the running theme between all of them, like the thing that they all tell me, is that they do it for love of the game. They're musicians because they love being musicians.
Yeah, inevitably, that seems to be the case with all artists of any kind.
Right, you do it because you feel driven to do it.
Yeah. So what's something that surprised you in talking to these folks? Is there someone where you just learned something that really took you aback?
Oh, Luis Aranda's story really, really hit me. There was this amazing moment. So I was trailing him while he and his crew were walking around, and we got photos of this a bit. So they stop outside of Gracias Madre. They're playing. This is their first bit of the evening. This is their first stop. And as they're playing, a crowd starts to form. Not a huge crowd, but enough to, it would stop you if you were trying to walk through that area. And halfway through the song, I realized that he's not the only one singing. And all of these crowd members are following along. They're singing, they know all the words. When I asked them afterwards, they had all learned that song in their childhoods. And they came from different countries.
Ah.
They all immigrated here. After that, Luis Aranda took song requests from other people who had similar stories. It amazed me.
Great. Well, thank you for being here with us, and we look forward to the rest of those stories.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I think that's enough out of us. You've been tuned in to Listen Local, brought to you by the staff of Mission Local. If you know something we don't that you think we should, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com. When we're done, you should check out some electronic tunes and more from across the pond, brought to you by John Digital. Thanks for listening.